All right. Good morning, TechEd.
Morning. Are we all awake?
I'm talking a little quieter today, just in case. How's everyone feeling? Was a good party last night? And how many went out after the party last night? Well played.
Who got in bed after midnight? After one, after two?
Still who hasn't got home yet? So our session today is on Internet Explorer. My name is Chris Jackson. I'm often known as the App Compat guy, so as you might imagine, I'll be talking a little bit about App Compat because that is probably the most challenging dimension of IE today. We're also going to be talking about how IE has changed from a manageability perspective. So with me today, I have
the
group policy guy.
Yes. I am not the group policy guy on Twitter, though. I am at Alan Birchall on Twitter. My name's Alan Birchall. I'm an IT consultant. But my day job is Active Directory and a PKI administrator. And I've been an Internet Explorer user from day one. Thank you, and I'm happy to admit it. Version 1 is the version I had. It was with the Internet Windows 95 Plus pack. I bought that, I installed it, and I've never changed browsers since.
We're doing the entire session today without slides, just in case you've had too many slides so far, so I hope that's okay.
This means that we can close this laptop lid here and you can see our faces.
So,
say hello, front row.
Oh, here's IE1, by the way. For those who don't remember what that was fantastic.
My favorite browser.
But this really is the transition in the conversation from where we came from fairly recently. Last year, the big push was retire IE6, get IE6 out of there, and we're trying to push it down. We're still at 6.1% worldwide, which is entirely too high. New Zealand is green, 0.5%, although we've talked to someone who has a few of those.
See, Australia's only 0.3. We're winning.
The US is at 0.2. We're winning.
Oh.
China's not doing so well, so there's some opportunity there, right? The world's most populous country, nearly one out of four people are still using IE6. Makes them easier to snoop on, I suppose. But that's... Sorry, this is not supposed to be a political conversation. But this conversation, let's retire IE6, let's just get anything else, is starting to shift, right? And the conversation I'm having a lot now is, all right, so now I'm going to move to Windows 7, Windows 7 with IE 8, of course, because that's what it came with, and that's the lowest one I can possibly get away with, and it's going to be supported for a full 10 years. And the truth of the matter is that's 100% correct. You are going to get security hot fixes for IE 8 for 10 years. You'll get 5 years of mainstream. We shipped IE8 in 2008, right? So 2013, right? It came with Windows 7. It came in 2009, so 2014, you get mainstream support and the extended support for another 5 years after that. So everything's hunky-dory. Except we're seeing a trend from the people who are providing the content that renders in your browser. So you'll have a highly secure browser that is less and less going to be able to consume the content that you're interested in.
But I like cat videos.
You'll probably be able to get cat videos.
Oh.
We announced, for example, for Office 365, that we're going to end support for IE8. Now, I expect this message to kind of get crafted over time, and instead of it just being literally nothing will work, to instead it be, hey, here are the things that are going to be less great for you, so that you can be really aware, right? Because what we're trying to do is transition to leverage some of the features in HTML5. And this is a movement, the movement to supporting N and N-1 that's going across platforms. Google Apps is doing this as well. If you look at jQuery, the platform that lots and lots of people are using to do cross-browser development, jQuery 2 does not support Internet Explorer 6, 7, or 8. And it's this N and N-1 approach that is becoming commonplace that is driving a lot of confusion. I thought you said that I would have 10 years with IE8. Why are you changing things up for me? And when I talk to customers about this, what I find is, well, I guess I've already drawn that. Let me draw it again. We draw a graph What cloud services are looking to do is to take advantage and bring innovation faster and faster for the upgrades that they push out. So they're saying, you know what, every time you come up with a new one, I want to use it. I'll settle with your old one, but overall, I want to move really quickly because there's a lot of innovation going on that I want to take advantage of that helps me differentiate my service. And in the consumer world, that's fantastic. As soon as you start talking to the enterprise, they're like, that's great, except for I don't use cloud services for every single bit of web content that we consume. I may go out and purchase a package that spits out web content, say Siebel, SAP, Oracle, Oracle Form, something like that, that I'm going to install on-premise. It's going to run for a while. I'm going to hire a web developer to come in and build some websites for me, and I don't want to have to keep them on staff to be constantly iterating over the browser. I would like to be able to support a cadence that looks more like this, where I get some periods of stability. So I can release it and let it sit there for a while and not have to be constantly changing it, modifying it, and updating it, particularly when we consider the fact that the typical enterprise has somewhere on the order of 1,500 to 2,500 different applications that they support. It's really difficult to be constantly going back and modifying those. It's costly, and it's what I call being on the treadmill, right? You're running, you're sweating, you're spending money, you're spending resources, and at the end, you just end up tired and sweaty and in exactly the same place. That's not what we want to do. At the same time, there is a great temptation to want to do this. Let's just get one browser and leave it there. That's why IE6 is a problem. Hey, we got IE6. I see no reason why we'd ever do anything else beyond that. Let's just keep that one forever. So how do we strike a balance between constantly moving, which is expensive, getting this punctuated equilibrium that lets me have a balance of investment over a reasonable amount of time, and what I talk to customers, that reasonable amount of time is typically somewhere on the order of 4 to 8 years of how often they plan to do refreshes of their applications. And how do I avoid getting stuck in a rut that goes absolutely forever? And what we have taken as an approach is the concept of the document mode. The ability to target a specific implementation of how we render HTML and a specific implementation of how we parse and execute a JavaScript. And we use that approach to let you continue to be compatible over time. And you can tag your websites. So if you go, for example, to a see if I have direct access connectivity. I do. I'll pick an arbitrary SharePoint website. Where should I go here? How about the AppCompat website? Not to grab the content, but instead to take a look at what we've done with SharePoint, which is helpfully taking a nice long time. Let me get Fiddler out of the way. Maybe that's slowing things up a bit. All right, well, let's instead go somewhere else. Let's go to Microsoft. Actually, maybe this one has it. I look at the source code here. And here we go. This is how we specify which document mode you're going to run in. What we say is we give you the ability to say, I can run in IE8 mode, I can run in IE9 mode, I can run in IE10 mode. Pick whichever one you have. And in fact, what they would have to do is just put in IE equals 10, and IE8 would automatically choose the highest one that they've got. And that locks it in. So when IE11 comes out, it doesn't automatically get promoted. It continues to abide by the same set of rules as it did before. Problem is, it's kind of tucked away in this very little-known meta tag that most people don't know about. And when they do know about it, they oftentimes run into some challenges with using it. One of the challenges is because we happened to publish a bit of documentation on MSDN that had the syntax wrong. So people copied and pasted it, and it didn't work because it was wrong. Go us, that was awesome. And the other is because they'll put it too late. This meta tag has to come before you put any HTML in, before you put any script in. Because as soon as we have to start parsing the script, we have to call it and see what we're going to do. So the order of precedence is we look at your group policies. Alan's going to show us that in just a minute. And we determine which group policies you should use. Right? Which zone are you in? We have some defaults. And then we can also customize it and build our own lists. If you put a header that you emit from your web server that specifies something, that will overrule the group policy. And if you put a meta tag, that will overrule the header. That gives you the maximum control with the minimum touches. If the policies default to what you want, do nothing. If, however, you'd like to change an entire site, one touch, go onto the web server and say, this site, emit this header, and boom, you're done. And if you have one page that you need to accept from that, a single additional meta tag, and you finish that to try and minimize the amount of touches that you have to do. That's the strategy that we've been bringing forward. Now, what I've been finding out is that most people are completely blissfully unaware of this. And in fact, most people really struggle with understanding the fact that if I have a doc type that determines whether or not I get standards mode or quirks mode, they don't know what that is. Either their tool drops it in there or it doesn't. They don't really have much awareness of it. I've noticed lately there's some tool out there, I haven't figured out which one yet, will actually put in a doc type that doesn't abide by the rules. And I'll show you what I mean by the rules. We'll head on over. Oh, here's this. This is what SharePoint does. As long as we're here. SharePoint says, please behave like IE8 for SharePoint 2010, because that was the version that was current, so we will continue to run like it's IE8. Conveniently, that helped us. We did not have to ship a SharePoint patch when IE9 came out, or 10, or 11. SharePoint 2013 has XUA compatible for IE equals 10. So we're using this strategy internally for our products. Oh, where was I going? Oh, I've lost my train of thought. Anyway, well, we'll just carry. What's that?
Doc type.
Ah, thank you.
She gets a prize.
She does get a prize. Give her the good prize.
Oh, the good prize?
She just rescued my demo.
You just won a mouse. Hang on. That's right.
It's like, wait a minute, I don't know what I'm talking about. I went to the party too. This is an interesting one that not many people know about. Let me actually shrink the page so it'll actually curl up a little bit and we can zoom in on it. But this is something that almost nobody knows about. It's not just doc type yes or no, standards or quirks. Doc types have rules. Now, if you put in a doc type of HTML2, A, why are you doing that? But B, it's going to put you into quirks. So all of these kind of make sense, right? It's these right here in the middle that are confusing as all get out. If I choose an HTML4 frame set or an HTML4 transitional, I am required to put in the URL of the spec. And I have seen a ton of websites that choose this doc type and don't put in the URL. They put in empty quotes. And as a result, they continue to get quirks mode. Quirks mode, incidentally, is a 1999 implementation of web standards designed to emulate IE5. And interestingly enough, 70% of enterprise web applications are running in IE5 quirks. Even more interesting, 12% of the top 5,000 public-facing websites that we track as part of the IE product development process, 12% are using quirks. So it is really commonly unknown. So the approach that we have depends on a knowledge of doc type, depends on a knowledge of a proprietary XUA compatible and people opting in. And the challenge is we haven't given administrators full power over the entire system. We give them a couple little knobs, but it's not perfect. And then we wonder why it's not working as well as we thought it might. So we're actively rethinking, how could we bring this powerful platform designed to allow you to have this punctuated equilibrium and make it comprehensible so you can leverage it as part of your strategy? In the interim, we're just going to try and explain it to you. So to kind of talk about it from the group policy side, I'll turn it over to my dear friend Alan, to talk about how we configure compatibility mode from a policy perspective and what those limitations are.
Okay. All right. So here we have someone who's on Internet Explorer 8. They're in Windows 7. Internet Explorer 9. My apologies. As a group policy guy, I, of course, set the homepage to my website for all my users because they love learning about group policy and I just like implementing pain on them. No, that's not true. But I also have a corporate intranet here. And here I have the corporate intranet. So it's a very simple corporate intranet, fair enough. But what it is configured as is if I go to the properties here of that web page and I zoom in here, you'll notice that it's actually configured for the local intranet zone. If I could draw a proper circle. All right. The way that that's configured to go to the local intranet zone is, of course, I go into Internet Explorer options, I go to the security tab, I go to local intranet, sites, advanced, and I have the local intranet configured here. Now, I've got this configured via group policy, all right? Internet Explorer 9 group policy, it's configured using Internet Explorer maintenance. Group policy settings. Who here knows about the Internet Explorer group policies, Internet Explorer maintenance? It's been around since literally day one of group policy. It's how Internet Explorer has always been configured. So if we want to have a look at what that looks like, go over to here to my computer here. I have under here the settings tab, Internet Explorer. I've got the URL configured. There's my homepage, heading into my favorite website in the world. I go to the local intranet site, and I have the sites in this zone. I put the local intranet in there. But you notice there was another site in there before, which means that the user still had the ability to customize and change the site zone. Now, I'm not saying that that's the greatest thing to do, because, of course, what they'll do is they'll go to Google, and they'll put that in as a trusted site, and or maybe their other favorite website, or... You know, they'll start putting in intranet sites and trusted, because, you know, I trust Google, I trust Facebook, you know, and we do trust, or Bing, as well.
It is a very touchy-feely name, right? And that's the challenge.
Yes. But putting the site into this zone here means that Internet Explorer will render that site in IE7 doctype mode, if it's in the local intranet. Okay, so that is one way that you can actually put in or ensure that your intranet sites are being rendered in a compatible view mode is by just putting it in the intranet site. There is a group policy that can actually arbitrarily assign it to the Internet Explorer 7 mode, but this is probably the most effective way you can do it in your organization. So, Internet Explorer maintenance mode. Maybe Internet Explorer 8, Internet Explorer 9, we're obviously saying, you know, let's get to a newer version of the browser. That's fine. But something you might notice in Internet Explorer maintenance, if you go to policies, Windows settings here, and you've got Internet Explorer 10 or 11 installed on your computer, you'll notice the Internet Explorer maintenance setting is gone now. Internet Explorer maintenance mode was deprecated a very, very long time ago, and it had for good reason, because it caused a lot of pain for group policy administrators. Normally, you had to have the same version of Internet Explorer installed on the machine that had the group policy management console installed to be able to edit the group policy settings for that version of the browser. Of course, if you had a different version of the browser installed on the computer that you're editing your group policy from to the versions on the clients, you started getting into all sorts of problems. So, Microsoft, since IE10, which means if you install IE10 on Windows 7, it will drop the Internet Explorer maintenance section, right? The policy settings will still exist, as you can see here, in the group policy, you just can no longer edit them, okay? So what do I do as an IT administrator to be able to implement those same policies to my users so that I can make sure that their homepage and their local intranet site zone are configured correctly? So, I don't want to save that, I wanted to unlink that. Dink, 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 cancel. So I'm just going to unlink this policy here, and I've got another template here, which is the IE admin template settings. So I'm just going to open this one up. So there's administrative templates to configure Internet Explorer. Administrative templates, though, have some advantages in that you can apply administrative templates to, if I go to the correct settings section here, is that once you apply the administrative templates to the user, if you were to remove that policy setting, it would revert back to the original value. Now, one of the settings here to change the homepage is, of course, to change the homepage, you must first disable it. That is the naming convention. I don't know why it says to disable the change the homepage, but if you actually go into the group policy setting here and you go enable, you disable changing the homepage, but then you can set the homepage. That makes so much sense. Okay, so anyhow, here's one I've configured earlier. The other one is if I go to Internet Explorer and I go to the Security tab, and here I've got the site to zone assignment. I'm going to show the site to zone. Here I've got my corporate intranet specified here, and I've given it a value of 1. Value of 1, oh, I really can't draw circles today. I also went to the party last night. If you see there, value 1 basically means that if the policy is set it to a value 1, that means that they are in the intranet zone. Okay, so the user has now moved to Internet Explorer 11, and we've now implemented this administrative template on the user. Policy is enabled. I'm now going to swap over. They've gone to their new computer, not this one. And of course, IE 11 is only available in Windows 8.1.
So far.
At the moment.
We will have it for Windows 7.
Yep.
We don't have a date yet. I'm sorry.
So the user right now has a homepage of, you might have noticed, the user had the Internet Explorer maintenance policy setting applied to them. That policy setting doesn't actually apply. So if you were to just log on and you were still using the Internet Explorer maintenance settings on IE 11 or IE 10, they won't apply. So you might start getting calls, or maybe your first pilot users go, why has my homepage gone to 9MSN? And then why is my intranet not looking quite right? Because it's no longer being rendered in the intranet zone. It's now being said, oh, this is an internet zone. Okay, which means it's not defaulting back to Internet Explorer 7 document rendering mode. So I've now applied the group policy via admin templates. I'm just going to do a group policy update. As it goes through, and it applies now the administrative templates to this computer. Yeah, I am going to have to log off. Sometimes it does require you to just quickly sign out and sign back in if you want to force it through quickly.
Look at that handsome guy on there.
He is, isn't he? Bang. Homepage is now being changed. And if we go to the intranet zone here, you'll now notice that it will be rendering in local intranet zone. Yay, my intranet page now should render correctly. But if the user still wants to go in and say customize their homepage, they can no longer customize their homepage because remember the policy setting said disable changing homepage. So they're now arbitrarily saying you must have this homepage. Internet Explorer maintenance would set that homepage, but it would also give the user the flexibility to specify an additional homepage tab. They could, of course, change the homepage, and after 120 minutes, the group policy would refresh and it whack them back to whatever the configured is. The same also goes for the Internet Explorer site zones. All right, you've set an arbitrary list. This is an administrative template. Administrative templates will disable the UI and prevent the user from changing those policy settings. So what do I do if I want to continue the behavior of the Internet Explorer maintenance policy settings, which means that I can apply the policies to these users, but still give them some flexibility to add additional sites and zones and additional homepage tabs, because you want to give them some level of customizability to their Internet Explorer, because, you know, the main homepage is great, but they also want to have Facebook there. Of course. And, you know, Facebook's never blocked in organizations as well. So what do? So we go back, and I unlink this. The answer is Internet Explorer preferences. Now, who's ever been to, I don't want to enforce it, I want to enable it. Who's ever been to any of my group policy preferences sessions I've run over the past few years? I see a show of hands. Who uses Internet Explorer preferences in their organization now? Excellent. You're all very good group policy people. Thank you. I'll show you the handshake afterwards. Okay, so I'm going to go in here and I'm going to show you how to configure Internet Explorer using group policy preferences. Now, it's pretty easy. You go to the user, you go to preferences, it's a control panel settings. I go Internet Explorer here, I go right-click new, I've got Internet Explorer 5 and 6, I've got Internet Explorer 7, 8 and 9 and 10, and of course I've got Internet Explorer 11, no, I don't. Right, I don't have an Internet Explorer 11 group policy preference. Who remembers the days of Internet Explorer 9 when there was no Internet Explorer 9 group policy preference, and then you would go in and you go, oh, I need to configure IE 9 by preferences and I can't do it. And then they might have attended my session, or maybe they found it on the internet, that there was a hack that would allow you to change the version number. Anyone remember the IE 9 preference? No? Okay. Maybe you were all still stuck on IE 6 at the time. That's all right. So what this, I have one here pre-configured, but what they've done now is Microsoft learnt from their previous, I won't say mistakes, behaviour. And what they've done now is if we go into preferences, internet settings, and I edit this group policy preference, you will now notice that the group policy preference version goes from IE10 to IE99. This means that the Internet Explorer 10 group policy preference will apply to your Internet Explorer 11 browser and beyond. How far beyond? Well, 99 versions beyond. Don't know how long that will take. Let's try to figure it out. So I'm just going to do some maths here. So we are currently in 2013. The first version of Internet Explorer came out in 1995. That was a great year. And so, and there's been 11 versions since then, and there's up to version 99, and let's 162 years of support. So they future-proofed themselves a little bit. Of course, if you're using those other browsers, you'll be right till next week. So, look, this is basically saying that this group policy, the previous problem was is they actually went, oh, it'll support Internet Explorer version 8 to Internet Explorer version 9. Internet Explorer version 9 came out, and the version number was 9.001. 9.001 is, of course, larger than 9, and so that group policy preference didn't work. This is why they've set it so high. So I'm just going to go in now, and I'm going to enable this group policy setting. And that's enabled. That's excellent. So, one other thing. Internet Explorer zones. So, the other thing that I have to set up in Internet Explorer preferences is the Internet Explorer zone. So, here I'm in Internet Explorer. I've got the group policy homepage configured like this. I go to the security tab, I go to local intranets, and I want to customize the site zone. I just click on this sites button here. And the button does nothing. This is the browser you love to hate. Not quite. But that button is not implemented. So how do I implement Internet Explorer zones for Internet Explorer if the button in the Internet Explorer preferences doesn't actually do anything? Well, luckily it's configured via registry key, and of course group policy preferences allows you to modify registry keys. So I'm just going to go now into the Windows settings here. Go to the registry keys. Here's one I've configured earlier. I'll show you the format. So it's HKEY current user software Microsoft Windows current version domains. Sorry. Current version Internet Explorer settings zone map domains. Now this is where it gets a little bit tricky. You have to put the last half of the domain as a key and the first part as another key. All right, meaning that that's the format of how the registry key is applied to the computer. You then specify HTTP, which means I'm going to trust this website using the HTTP protocol, and I've got a 1 there that says I'm going to trust it. This is how you can configure the IE site zones to make sure that specific zones are still configured there using preferences, but allow the users, maybe your developers or those more advanced yourself users in the organization, to still be able to customize the zone settings. So.
And that's sort of an interesting conversation, too, which I have with a lot of my customers, which is, hey, you know, if I do the site to zone assignment list, I lock people out of editing their own things. The reality is, once you're on at least Windows Vista, which means, for all pragmatic purposes, at least Windows 7, since no one actually uses Vista, that moving something out of the internet zone and into a trusted zone is a significant security decision. And it's becoming more significant. So in Internet Explorer 10, you have the option, which is disabled by default, of leveraging something called Enhanced Protected Mode, which is like Protected Mode on steroids. Internet Explorer 11 puts you in that by default, which means you really are sandboxing the browser. to a significant extent. And as soon as you put something into trusted sites, it's broken out of that sandbox and it runs with the same permissions as every other application that that user has access to. That's kind of a big deal. Do you really want your users making that decision simply because a website asked them to? Because let's be realistic, that's what happens. You know, I love that you pointed out if it's a developer or someone who can make that decision, we want to enable that.
Yeah.
But when it's not, if it's just because that's how they've always done it, then we need to think, is that really the strategy you want to employ for these users? Are they able to make that decision satisfactorily?
Yeah. So maybe you'll have the small minority of your users that are in that trusted group that you trusted to make those site and zone assignments, and you can apply a separate policy just to them. And that, in that case, you would use preferences. But though for your general populace of your users, you would use administrative templates and lock it out. So as you can see now, I've got Internet Explorer group policy preferences assigned. I can go in and I can set it to the most fantastic search engine in the world as my secondary homepage. I can go in, I can go local sites, I can modify the sites, I can add other sites here. That's a good website there. I can modify, I can make changes. But if I go in and let's say I remove a home page, I do a GP update, let that apply. It's applying. I go back into Internet Explorer. Come on, three. Home page has been changed. Oh. But because it was the primary homepage that I removed. But the user can still go in and still change their homepage. But that secondary homepage tab will still stick. Okay, so that gives you a lot of flexibility there. So that's how you get off Internet Explorer maintenance. Let's say you've now completely migrated off and you no longer want to use Internet Explorer maintenance. So who here has all their group policies for the users in pretty much, for the people in the organization, pretty much in one group policy object or only a few group policy objects? Got quite a few hands there. Or maybe you've got a mixture of group policy settings. So what you can do after you've done and dusted is if you should still have a Windows 7 machine, if you log on, or yes, it would need to be a Windows 7 machine. If you log onto a machine that still has Internet Explorer 9 on it, the same group policy setting for the Internet Explorer maintenance, and I just log back on as the same user, that's not what I wanted to do. So you can go back, launch Group Policy Management Console from one of the machines in your organization that still has IE 9 or less on it. You can go in, edit the group policy that has that Internet Explorer maintenance there, settings, go to Internet Explorer maintenance. This is the same group policy that we saw on Windows 8 that didn't have it. And you can go in and you can reset the browser settings. That clears the Internet Explorer maintenance settings, because if all you do is go back in there and wipe the home page, it will set the user to a blank home page. So to clear that policy setting, because there's no enable disable option, you go in here, you reset the browser settings. Are you sure you want to clear them? Yes, you are. That's now effectively cleared the Internet Explorer maintenance section of the group policy settings, and there's now nothing left in there. It used to be pretty nasty to do that in the olden days. You had to go in and hack the group policy. So you've made the decision to go to the newest version of IE. That's pretty much how you now manage IE. Internet Explorer maintenance is gone, deprecated. Policy will still work, but don't use it at all. It has a lot of pain. Start using a combination of preferences and admin templates, but generally speaking, admin templates are what you want to do because you don't really want the general populace of your users to be modifying those settings.
Yep. So in other words, what you're finding so far is that I think we, as the browser in IE, have had the most manageable browser.
By far.
And the story gets better as you move forward. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. The way you managed browsers 13 years ago is not how you should be managing your browser today. They've certainly updated it. There are many thousands of settings that you can apply, many thousands of settings that you can apply to Internet Explorer via Grid Policy.
How many settings can you apply? And I've actually done this math. With the Grid Policy permutations that we have today, I wanted to figure out, like, how many different permutations are there? So this is the actual number of different permutations of IE that you have available. Let's just kind of go through and see them.
Oh, that's not many. Oh, a few. A couple.
That's kind of a big number.
Getting bigger.
This is all HTML5, by the way. So there's quite a few.
A lot. I've known some organizations that have tried to implement this number of permutations in their organization of Grid Policy.
You know, and this is the challenge, is that there is a huge number of permutations, and guess what? Turns out we don't have this many test cases. So most of the permutations you see, no one else on the planet has ever seen before. And just for comparison, this is the number of molecules in the observable universe. One screen.
Whoever said Grid Policy was complicated?
And that is the challenge and the opportunity, which is you have this amazing level of configuration to do whatever you want. An approach that I think doesn't work is to go one by one on an Excel spreadsheet. I always see it in Excel for some reason, and try to pick the best possible choice, particularly given some of the criticism that we've already given on some of the naming conventions used in Grid Policy, because that's what people are using to base their decisions, and they end up with this highly customized configuration. What we have found, my team, which handles the escalation for app compat issues in the browser, finds that roughly 10% of the issues that are raised to us do not exist in a vanilla configuration. There is something about that customer's configuration of the browser that causes it to fail, and we've never seen it before, so we couldn't have seen it coming. So there's risk in taking advantage of all of this configurability and moving away from the default.
So you might be going, but I'm a Grid Policy administrator. I'm not doing my job if I'm not applying Grid Policies to my users. And I do want to keep the browsers in a somewhat secure configuration. Wouldn't it be great if Microsoft had some way of being able to tell me what the best practice or good guidelines or template or settings that have been well tested and used in the organization, in the world, that I can pretty safely apply to my organization? Well, luckily, there is. If you go to Microsoft.com/, and this is a really complicated URL, Microsoft.com/SCM, that's it, Security Compliance Manager, you can download what is called the Microsoft Security Compliance Manager. This tool has a lot of guidance and Grid Policy and documentation around the recommended settings for configuring your computers. Who remembers back in Windows 2003 days, they had a couple of security templates included out of the box with 2003. One was called SSLF, one was called EC for enterprise configuration. You'd have those security templates, you'd apply it to your machines, and your computers would be secure forever and a day from then on. Yeah, that was the problem, is that the out-of-the-box security templates that came with Windows, of course, became out of date as Windows grew older. So Microsoft has got this tool. This tool will actually check for updates, so it will actually dial back home and ask, hey, have you got any newer guidance for new templates or updates, updates for templates in your organization? But one of the templates it does provide is Internet Explorer 10. Of course, IE 11 is not officially out yet, neither is Windows 8.1, so those templates aren't out yet. But we're going to use the IE 10 templates. And so they've got an Internet Explorer 10 template here for both the computer and the user. If we go to the user settings, there are 5 recommended settings. One of those recommended settings isn't really a recommended setting at all. It's kind of a, we're just putting this in, oh, I don't want to cross it out. We're just putting this in here to kind of tell you that this setting exists. The default is disabled. Microsoft says, well, it's not customized or not configured, and the customized setting is not configured. But I can go into these settings. Who knows that Grid Policy has descriptions when they go into Grid Policy Management Console? Whoever found those descriptions somewhat lacking? Okay. So if we go into here, it actually has the description of that Grid Policy setting. Prevents branding. This is the same description that here that you would see in Group Policy Management Console. But if we go over to here, you'll find that there is a vulnerabilities, potential impact, and countermeasure information on that group policy setting as well. The one I really like, which doesn't actually have anything to do with Internet Explorer, but it's a really good reason, a really good setting to know of, is if you have BitLocker configured, Microsoft recommends that you turn off the sleep state for BitLocker, because if your computer is in a sleep state, it can wake up without a PIN. But there's also a known attack to BitLocker where if you have an external FireWire port, you can launch a DMA, direct memory access attack, via the FireWire port and get the private keys for the computer. Well-known attack. Microsoft's recommendation is you turn on Hibernate. A lot of people don't like Hibernate, but the setting itself actually has a lot of information there about why this is being done this way, what's the impact, and you can then make an educated decision on whether or not to turn the sleep mode on or off for your organization, because it gives you that extra information. So I've got this template here. This is great. I've got 5 for users, and I have 147 for computers. So of course, what I'm going to do is have to have the screen on the left and the screen on the right and go transpose them all. No. It's a lot easier than that. What I can do is I can take this template, I can do a group policy backup based on this template. I could also duplicate this template and then make customizations to this template based on my organization. All right, and so that could be my personal baseline template for my organization. But we're just going to take the out-of-the-box one here. I'll just take the user one because it's, you know, smaller. I'm just going to save this to my desktop in a new folder called GPO. I export that. Now, this has just exported that group policy baseline from SCM as a group policy backup. It looks like a group policy backup if you've ever backed up a group policy. I have the files here on my desktop, and watch this. I love this feature. This is the greatest feature with Hyper-V. I can go copy and paste into my virtual machine, because I've got Windows 8.1 here. Isn't that great that I can copy and paste files between virtual machines and my host? And now what I can do is I can go in, open up the group policy object. I have a lot of group policies here. Internet Explorer security template. Generally, I would say these security templates you should actually have grouped together. In other words, one template should match one group policy object. There's a couple of reasons why when the new group policy template comes out. You know where all those settings are, which means you're not having to find all those settings spread out amongst a number of group policy objects. It's also a lot nicer to be able to compare that group policy object back into Security Compliance Manager, because it actually goes both ways. I can take a backup of my live group policy object, put it in SCM, and compare the two. But here I'm just going to now import the settings. No, I don't want to back up the group policy first. It's asking me, well, where is this group policy backup? It's here. There it is. It sees it as a group policy. The domain is contoso.com. Scans for any unique strings in there that might trip up. There's nothing. Copy everything across. Go finish. Template has been imported. Go to the settings tab here. And all those baseline template settings have now been imported into my group policy object, into my domain, from the recommended guidance from Microsoft. So I now have a template that's been well tested. Microsoft has gone to a lot of organizations and defense and government organizations and go, let's talk about what policy settings are going to make your environment more secure, but hopefully not break everything in the process. Your mileage may vary. You should obviously test for your own organization. And that's why we have the option in the Security Compliance Manager to make your own baseline. But this is a good way to get recommended guidance into your organization, or you might just want to export your group policy security templates and compare it against what Microsoft says, and then you can go through and one by one rationalize which one you want to go with.
Great, so we've got a terrific and evolving management experience. I think the next challenge is how do we get the business to embrace something modern when they kind of a little bit of upgrade fatigue is kind of what I'm seeing, particularly because the last upgrade was typically a pretty painful one, right? IE6 to IE8 is hard, right? And IE8 to IE10, right? 6 to 8, that's 2. 8 to 10, that's 2. So they must be the same. And what's in it for me? And so the first thing we do to show you what's in it for you is we give you fish.
Ooh, look at the fish.
And thus far, swimming fish has not resonated with a single CIO, a single technical decision maker that I've ever spoken with. So when I start the conversation, I think what's important is to help understand what is in it for the business and for the users. When I think about what's in it for the technology people, try and find what makes a lot of sense to them. Here's a feature I show all the time, which makes people go, ooh. The F12 developer tools, built in, they've been built in since IE8, they've gotten really good in IE11, has this feature called Pretty Print. If you've ever had to debug JavaScript, this is what it looks like these days because this saves bandwidth. Try debugging that. It's not so fun. Click one button, and all of a sudden, it's all formatted like functions, and it's actually readable. It's called Pretty Print. Developers love that. I normally spend some time to run a session on the developer tools so that people can go, oh, I get what this thing is. I have the ability to trace network requests as they come on board, right? I can see exactly what communication is happening. So if I start it, if I want to see what the underlying problem is, I can see, oh, I made these requests. Here's when the request went out. Here's how long it took to come back. What's the problem? I can help diagnose network issues at the HTTP level. All built in, all free. A lot of capabilities for a technical audience to try and sell them on why it matters to them. Another big one is you get better performance. So rather than using one of ours, because everyone will think that that's cheating, we'll go ahead and use SunSpider. It's written by the folks who write WebKit, right? So Chrome and Safari. And I can see that I got a score of 101.2. Let's try the other guys. And let's hope we still win. We'll take a look and see how they're doing on the exact same script. I'm going to run them one at a time so they're not interfering with each other. That's 184.6, so we're literally almost twice as fast as the guys who say they're really fast. And we'll run Firefox and see how good we do against those guys. And we can already tell it's taking a bit longer. They're at 183.2, so it looks like they came in second. We are the fastest browser. That might possibly matter. Let me put a caveat in there for you, though. By default, all of your internal websites are going to be in the local intranet zone. And by default, the local intranet zone is going to put everything into compatibility view. Compatibility view is going to make things highly compatible. However, what we do not do is we do not do the same level of performance work. And actually, I have to go to a really old version of the benchmark on the legacy document modes.
Oh, that's so quick.
You'll notice it's a little slower now, right? Each test is taking nearly a third of the time it took for me to run the entire suite of tests. So I'm paying a penalty. So when I think about my application portfolio, it's terrific. These things, right, the goal that we have with document modes and with the browser is that the IE7 document mode in IE11 should not be slower than it was in IE10, should not be slower than it was in IE9, 8, and certainly should not be slower than actual IE7 was. But that's the only bar that we're trying to meet. Don't make it slower. We are not trying to get 7 doc mode to keep up with 11 doc mode. The investments in perf come with the modern doc modes. And if you aren't aware of that, I once had someone bring in their laptop and go, all right, you're saying, this was an IE9 at the time, you're saying IE9's really fast. Here's a website, and look at how much faster it is on Firefox. Well, it was running in IE5 Quirks, which behaves a lot like this. And we took it and then pushed it into the latest docket mode. Since it was running on Firefox, we were fairly confident it would actually render correctly. And all of a sudden, we were winning. So be aware, there's performance to be had, a huge performance increase. We are beating everybody by a lot right now. And it's always going back and forth. Everyone's always innovating. But our JavaScript engine's really good. To take full advantage of it, you've got to break yourself out and know that XUA compatible in order to be able to move forward. This will keep running for a while. Other things to be mindful of when it comes to compatibility, and to describe some of the things that we've been doing and not doing that have side effects. How many of you are on IE 10 or higher? So, wow, most of you.
Wow.
That's fantastic. IE10 added an additional document mode that we call quirks. So it became redundant with the quirks we already have, so we began calling that IE5 quirks. Here's the challenge we were trying to solve. Our goal is to get to same markup. If you're making a web page, you should be able to write markup one time and have it work on every browser. And in standards mode, that's the direction we were going in. But in quirks mode, that's not how it happened. And as I said, 12% of public-facing websites are using quirks mode. So all of a sudden, that's a problem. So what did we do? Well, we can't get rid of IE5 compatibility, or all of those websites will break. So we added an additional quirks mode that we internally refer to as interop quirks, or interoperable quirks, if you want to be the long form. And that behaves the same way that quirks mode would have behaved on other browsers. So this website, as an example, is a website that came in. Someone called it out because of this. It's an academic website. It's now closed. And they said, all right, so you're telling people to use compatibility mode to submit their proposals. That solution doesn't actually work. They're running in quirks mode, and they actually need to run in standards mode or interop quirks. IE10's interop quirks fix that web page. If you were to run this in IE5 quirks, which is what IE9 and earlier would do, it doesn't lay out correctly. The consequence of that in the enterprise is if I don't have my websites zoned correctly so they get that compatibility view default, I will be promoting everything from IE5 quirks to interop quirks, and they are quite different. The big change that we made for IE11. That's causing some impact is the user agent string. Of course, it always changes, so just having a different version at all is a problem. But there's something very significantly different in the user agent string this time. The text MSIE is no longer in there. Now, there's a reason why, and it had a very positive compatibility effect on the public internet. That very positive effect was lots and lots of web pages were sniffing for IE and saying, oh, it's IE. Where's my oldest HTML? The stuff that's really stinky is back behind the garage. Let's give it that and see what it does with it. Right? And modern IE doesn't do terribly well with ancient, crusty old HTML, and neither does any other browser. And they said, all right, everyone else gets good modern HTML5. We wanted the same HTML5. If we actually put in a lie and say, hey, I'm Chrome, all of a sudden we would get HTML that we rendered terrifically. And this fixes that. And it has side effects. Because there are some websites that are going to sniff and say, oh, are you IE? If not, you're not supported. You're the only thing I do. And that's really common in the enterprise. And it also happens to break ASP.NET. Which I've heard a couple of people might use in the enterprise. We have a patch for it. It's already out there. I listed all of the patches on my blog for all of the operating systems. And the ASP.NET team has told me that from now on, IE 11 and higher will no longer be considered IE and have to have a specific entry in their tables. IE 11 and higher are, from this point forward, considered a generic HTML5 browser. Finally. But for IE 11, you do have to do a patch for that because we removed the token MSIE. Beyond that, right, when we start looking at the overall compatibility impact, the number of applications that break in a transition from IE 8 to IE 9 that we've been unable to fix using document modes has been, since we released IE 9, 4 worldwide. And I can show you a couple of them based on how much time we have. From IE 9 to IE 10, 1 worldwide. So far, ASP.NET could have brought those statistics down quite a bit, but we can fix those with version lies, so and a quick patch. But the overall statistics are remarkably good. What's interesting is the one that breaks from 9 to 10 happened to also be one of the ones that broke from 8 to 9, so good job on them. It's actually these guys. This is an actual live website. It's still broken. Yay, good job, guys. And I can show you why it's broken to kind of give you a sense of how really unusual it is. Like, I don't expect to find this code anywhere else. If I go into the developer tools, I'll take a peek at the JavaScript code here. I can go and look at this thing called checks.js, which is where it happens, and I'm going to look for the word sufficient. And okay, here's where I add it, and I can see the logic that's written incorrectly. They're checking the script engine version. I've never seen anybody do this before. I didn't even know you could do this before. They want to make sure it's at least 5.5. What's wrong with this logic? Right? This actually will work on every version of the browser that we released through IE8 because we didn't have a script engine that was greater than 5. But in IE9, the script engine was 9.0. In 10, it's 10.0. In 11, it's 11.0. So guess what happens here? Is 11 less than 5? Nope, we're good. Is 0 less than 5? Yes, we fail, and it's insufficient. Incidentally, that's why Windows 7 was version 6.1, is because of the plethora of checks to see whether you're Windows XP, major version less than or equal to 5, minor version less than or equal to 1, since it was 5.1. There is no longer anyone trying to make the call, is this a major release, is this a minor release? It's literally the app compat team decides, you know what, that fixes XP era apps by just making it be 6.1. All of those version checks that are written wrong start passing. That's why Windows 8 was 6.2. That's why Windows 8.1 is 6.3, because they all pass that same logical check. So they wrote it wrong. Then I said it works for IE9, so how'd they do that? Well, they wrote this little patch here and said, all right, let's compare the major version to 9.0 and the minor version to 9.0. Conveniently, they use the OR symbol, or this would have also failed, right? Because the major version is 9, so they get a nice little boxing between a float and an integer, so they spend a lot of CPU cycles doing that. The minor version is actually 0, so it's not equal to 9.0, but because it's OR'd, it actually works. It's literally some of the strangest code I've ever seen in my life, which is more unusual because I've actually typed the correct code on multiple conferences that are recorded and available on Channel 9 that they could literally type in exactly what I wrote. I also emailed them the correct code. They could have copied and pasted that. I don't know why we have this very strange fix in there. But that's the kind of thing that we're seeing. The other thing that we saw was one that was putting a drop shadow behind a table. And on IE8 and earlier, right, it was using a drop shadow using DirectX filters, an old IE6 era technology. What IE8 and earlier would actually render it behind all of the borders of the table, so it just kind of gave it a little bit of depth, I guess. And IE9, which is a full DirectX application, rendered a shadow behind the entire table, right? Either one could be considered right, although when you put a shadow behind the entire table and the shadow is black and the text is black, it makes it kind of hard to read the contents of the table. Never saw that one before or again. So you start getting into these really unusual circumstances. And here's sort of another one that broke, which is, hey, we don't like you because you're Internet Explorer. And it turns out that all they're trying to do is to spit out some HTML5 and see if the element exists. The problem is that before they do that, they say, hey, please behave like a non-HTML5 browser. In which case, we can't handle the HTML5, so we're basically, they've kneecapped us, and if we ran in edge mode, it turns out it will actually run just fine. They just put the please break it switch in there. But compatibility overall, if you leverage these document modes, is really high, making it possible for you to continue to move forward and embrace the modern web. Be aware of the performance you can get, the manageability improvements, and, you know, really get yourselves on a trajectory to be using more modern web. I'm really impressed with the number of IE10 folks in here. That's really, I think, fantastic and refreshing. We've got a lot of people who are pretty sad about IE8 not being supported on as many web services these days as they might like. But with that, we have about a minute left for questions. Oh, what an adorable family. Seriously, look at that.
Oh, they're mine.
Can you tell?
So thank you very much. Any last words?
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, have a great rest of the day. We'll see you at drinks.